Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, we will be talking about Meta, which is a holding company that's in charge of Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, among other subsidiaries. In this video, we will be looking at Meta's business by going over its annual report, then review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios, and finally find the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review Meta.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10-K, which is the annual report that Meta Platforms Inc. filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 31st, 2021. And on page 7 of this report, the company provides us a business overview. Meta claims that its mission is to give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. All of its products, including its apps, share the vision of helping to bring the metaverse to life. The company reports its financial results in two segments. First is the family of apps, and second is the reality labs. The family of apps segment generates substantially all of its revenue from selling advertising placements to marketers. Ads on its platforms enable marketers to reach people based on a variety of factors, including age, gender, location, interests, and behaviors. Marketers purchase ads that can appear in multiple places, including on Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, and third-party applications and websites. On the other hand, Reality Lab generates revenue from sales of consumer hardware products, software, and content. The family of apps contains apps such as Facebook, which helps give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. Facebook is a place for people to share life's moments and discuss what's happening, nurture and build relationships, discover and connect to interests, and create economic opportunity. Users can experience this through news feeds, stories, groups, watch, marketplace, reels, dating, and more. The second app is Instagram, which brings people closer to the people and things they love. Instagram feed, stories, reel, video, live, shops, and messaging are places where people and creators can express themselves and push culture forward through photos, videos, private messaging, and connect with and shop from their favorite businesses. The third app is Messenger, which is a simple yet powerful messaging application for people to connect with friends, family, group, and business across platforms and devices through chat, audio, and video calls and rooms. The third app is Messenger, which is a simple yet powerful messaging application for people to connect with friends, family, groups, and businesses across platforms and devices through chat, audio, video calls, and rooms. The fourth application is WhatsApp. WhatsApp is a simple yet reliable and secure messaging application that is used by people and businesses around the world to communicate and transact in a private way. As we discussed earlier, Reality Labs is the second business segment. Reality Labs is augmented and virtual reality products help people feel connected anytime, anywhere. MetaQuest lets people defy distance with cutting-edge VR hardware, software, and content. Facebook Portal video calling devices help friends and family stay connected and share the moments that matter in meaningful ways. Next, the company talks about its competition. Meta states that it faces significant competition in every aspect of its business, including but not limited to companies that facilitate the ability of users to share, communicate, and discover content and information online, or enable marketers to reach their existing or prospective audiences. Meta lists out Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, TikTok, Microsoft, Snap, Tencent, and Twitter as its biggest competitors. Next, on page 109 of this report, the company breaks down its revenue across its two business segments. For the fiscal year 2021, the family of apps brought in about $116 billion. Reality Labs brought in about $2.3 billion. And the company's total revenue for the year 2021 amounted to about $118 billion. When we look at the past three-year trend, both the family of apps and Reality Labs have seen a growth in its numbers. Next, when we look at the income from operations, an income is what's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. For the family of apps, the company's income amounted to about $57 billion. And for the Reality Labs, it reported a loss of about $10 billion. The company's total income from operations amounted to about $47 billion for the fiscal year 2021. When we look at the past three-year trend, we can see that the family of apps has seen a growth in its income every year for the past 3 years. However, the Reality Labs has seen larger losses every year over the past 3 years. This makes sense because as the company is trying to grow its Reality Labs into a larger business, it will take a while before it gets the economy of scale where it eventually starts becoming profitable. However, most recently, the company is losing a lot of money when it comes to its Reality Labs segment. At the same time, the company's total income from operations has been trending upwards every year for the past 3 years. Finally, let's look at the company's long-lived assets by geographic location. For the fiscal year 2021, Meta has about $55 billion of long-lived assets, which include property and equipment in the United States. The rest of the world has about $14 billion of its long-lived assets. In 2020, Meta had about $43 billion of assets in the United States. and the rest of the world amounted to about $12 billion. So we can see that Meta's long-lived assets have grown all across the board. Now that we have a brief understanding of Meta's business, its two operating segments, and its revenue breakdown, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, I'm on Morningstar looking at Meta Platforms Inc. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2012, the company's revenue was about $5 billion. And for the year 2021, it was about $118 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's revenue has been trending upwards. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2012, the company's operating income was about $538 million. And for the year 2021, it was about $46.8 billion. Ideally, we want to see the company's operating income to have a similar trend as the company's revenue. That is, we want these numbers to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. After that, looking at the net income, the net income is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2012, the company's net income was about $53 million. And for the year 2021, it was about $39 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's net income has always been positive, which tells us that the company has always reported a profit. Ideally, we want to see the company's net income number to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. Next, Meta does not pay out any dividends. After that, looking at the shares outstanding, back in 2012, the company had 2,166 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 2,824 million shares outstanding. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that Meta's shares outstanding number was growing all the way through 2017. However, after 2017, the company's shares outstanding number has been trending downwards, which means that the company has been buying back its shares every year since 2017. Ideally, we want to see the company's shares outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. A decreasing shares outstanding number tells us that the company has been buying back its shares, which helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. After that, looking at the book value per share, the book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2012, the company's book value was about $4.96 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $45.53 per share. Meta's book value per share has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the company's capital spending from its operating cash flow. Back in 2012, the company's free cash flow was about $377 million. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $39.8 billion. Ideally, we want to see the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady, or increasing. I will be using the 2021 free cash flow of $39,116 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2012, the company's net margin was 0.63%. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was 31.20%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales over the past 12 months, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had $31.20 left as pure profit. Next is the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2013, the company's return on equity was about 10.95%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was 29.07%. Three ways of reporting high return on equity numbers is when a company takes on more debt, that is when a company becomes more leveraged, second is when the company's income numbers go up, and third is when a company buys back its shares. Next is the return on invested capital. This number gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2013, the company's return on invested capital was about 10%. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was 26.18%. Meta's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 7.7%. And since the company's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, Facebook does not have any interest coverage because it does not have any interest-bearing debt. Next, looking at the financial health and liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company has enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Back in 2012, the company's current ratio was at 10.71, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.81. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Due to the nature of Meta's advertising business, the company is barely going to have any inventory. So the quick ratio numbers are going to be just as what we saw for the current ratio. Back in 2012, the company's quick ratio was at 10.26. And for the latest quarter, it's at 2.62. Both the current and quick ratios indicate that Meta is liquid enough to easily survive for the next 12 months. Next is the financial leverage. The financial leverage compares the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 2.0 tells us that half of the company's assets are financed via liabilities, and half of them are financed via shareholders' equity. Back in 2012, the company's financial leverage was at 1.28, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.33. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has stayed fairly consistent. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2012, the company's debt-to-equity was at 0.17, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.10. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. The day sales outstanding number gives us an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sale to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2012, the company's day sales outstanding was about 45 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 33 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company's management is being aggressive with its accounting, as it's trying to recognize its revenue sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on its income statement. Facebook's day sales outstanding number has stayed fairly consistent and recently has been trending downwards, which tells us that the company's management does not appear to be playing any such accounting tricks. Next is the payables period. This number gives an idea of how many days does the company take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2012, the company took about 17 days to pay its suppliers, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 32 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company's management is trying to hold on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers on its cash flow statement. Meta's payables period has stayed fairly consistent over the past 10 years. It did spike up back in 2021. However, over the past 12 months, that number has dropped back down. Now let's look at the current valuation. The first item on the list is the price to earnings ratio. Meta's PE is at 15.4. The company's price to book is at 4.5. The company's price to sales is at 4.8. And the company has a price to cash flow of 9.7. When we compare Meta's current valuation to its 5-year average, we can see that on all the valuation metrics, Meta is currently undervalued as compared to its 5-year average. And when we compare Meta to the S&P 500, an S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. And we can think about the S&P 500 as our opportunity cost. Based on the price to earnings and price to cash flow metric, Meta is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Over here, I've pasted Meta's 2021 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is $39,116 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 5%. What this means is I expect Meta's free cash flow to grow at 5% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to at least give me a 10% return. In other words, I want to double my investment in about 7 years. Next, I expect Meta's long-term growth rate to be 3.23%. What this means is after the 10-year mark in perpetuity, I expect Meta's free cash flow to grow at 3.23% annually. This number is in line with the 30-year U.S. Treasury yield. The company has 2,824 million shares outstanding and has $0 in its long-term debt. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $235 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about $204 per share, we can see that the company's current stock is trading about 13% below the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $306 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $663 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $235. If you disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Meta is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $108 per share. Finally, let's try to figure out what kind of return can we expect to get on this investment if you were to invest in the security at the current stock price. For that, I will run a goal-seek analysis where I will set my sell to the intrinsic value. My to value is going to be the current stock price, which is $203.77 per share. And I will run this analysis by changing the company's discount rate. What I get is, if I were to invest in the security at the current stock price of about $203.77 per share, then I can expect to get an annual return of about 11% on this investment. Overall, Meta has good fundamentals. The company has little to no debt and has ample amount of free cash flow that comes in every year to fund its future growth and buy back its stock. Meta faces various headwinds such as inflation, supply chain disruptions at advertisers, a shift in users towards products that monetize at lower rates, and privacy changes with Apple iOS devices that prevents advertisers from tracking users without their consent. At the same time, Facebook's user base is expected to see a modest growth in the years to come, and its investments in technologies related with Reality Labs should eventually pay off. Lastly, we saw that Meta was undervalued not only from a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis standpoint when we use a 10% discount rate, but also when we looked at Meta's current valuation and compared it to its 10-year average, we saw that Meta is currently undervalued. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Meta interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'll greatly appreciate it. Thank you.